All right. We've all determined Blake isn't worth much, but his value just went a lot higher because he booked Matthew McConaughey for us. It was awesome. We actually talked to him a couple days ago, and he wanted to do it at a different time than our show, and we said, you're McConaughey. We'll do it whenever. And so we did. It was actually on Zoom. We were all gathered around our computers with video and got to see him. So it was really kind of weird because we sat there. We got there real early.
And then there was
like
a silence.
45 minutes early, we just locked in and just said, okay, let's just wait. Let's just wait for McConaughey. And
you know when you go to the eye doctor and they have to do the puff in your eye for glaucoma? I'm not sure. But it's those seconds leading up to it where you're like, I can't believe, like, this is, when's it going to happen? We were all sitting here in silence, and then all of a sudden, Matthew McConaughey was on my computer screen. It's like, oh, it happened. He's here.
So this is two parts. Wild. We're going to do this for the next two segments. This first part's about 10, 11 minutes long. And yes, so now it's just us sitting right up here in the den, waiting for him to pop on Zoom, and this happened. Yeah, yeah.
Dallas, are we live? We have photos and we have videos and audios. Thanks for waiting. I got into some stuff, and you know, I'd start a little leak on the 8 o'clock, led to a little leak on the 9 o'clock to the 10 to the 11. So I'm a little tardy, but here we are.
Well, we appreciate you doing this with us today.
My pleasure.
I'm Dan. This over here is Jake.
Hello.
Hey, howdy.
And welcome to our little radio show in Dallas. I finished this just Sunday.
Yeah.
Love it, dude. Really, cool. I don't want to make this a backhanded compliment, but I'm surprised at how much I love it. Just
awesome.
Because you do seem to be good at many things, and didn't know if writing would be one of those, but I just like the style. I like the quick hitty. I was telling Jake earlier, who doesn't like you nearly as much as I do, didn't read that book yet. But just the style, there's no 15-page story. It's all quick hits, and you got so much, but you pulled enough from each thing, I thought, to really make it move. The longest part was at the end. And by the end, I was pumped up. I also, Matthew, if, I don't know what I should call you. I'm fired up to see what the next 50 years brings for you, man. Great
book. I appreciate that. You know, I write it. I'm honored with it. I don't know how it's going to translate. I don't know how it's going to be received. And to go along this tour and hear in ways, like you just told me, ways that it translated and was not just only, oh, that's just a book about you, Matthew, though it is very personal, that people going, here's what I got out of it, or I laughed my ass off, or you know what, I never thought of this. This was a little wisdom bomb you crossed that I'm taking with me in my pocket. That makes my heart swell. It makes me happy because that's the goal. I want to make art that's going to translate. So to hear it does makes me happy.
One book-related real inside thing that I was wondering about. Have you been in contact with Johan, the Amsterdam bike owner?
No.
Since the adventure.
We have not. Two of my buddies, though, Rory and Cole, Rory did see him again. Rory went back over there on a European trip and went by and talked to him. Was he not a stud?
The CSI, CSI? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
on CSI and yeah. of course, the stoner. Not that you weren't a stoner in
Days Confused?
In Days, yeah. We're big fans. To prove it, we wanted to play you a little audio. We certainly love McConaughey audio. We love how you can describe making a sandwich. Although a lot of debate on our station has been about putting ketchup on a sandwich. Is that the proper thing to do?
Hey, one man's appetite's another's indigestion.
Yeah, so want to prove it, Jake?
Yeah, so
some audio?
If we have a debate about what to cover in the next segment on the show, we spin a wheel. Here's the wheel.
All right. The McConaughey wheel.
We have a McConaughey wheel.
Right. Yes.
Just and then we'll. Oh, it landed on three. We're going to. We'll talk Cowboys today.
Love it.
Cowboys, Longhorns, or Rangers. Go ahead and spin the. You know, that's what we do.
Got you.
Yeah, I pre-ordered the book. I loved it. I was wondering. It does seem a daunting task to go through all the writing. You are journal guy, Jake was imploring me to start a journal before the pandemic or as the pandemic started.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be living through a clearly unprecedented time, blah, blah, blah. But to go through them all years later must have been a mountain.
It was a mountain. I mean, I had over the, you know, starting 20 years ago, I started transcribing some, like uploading them to my laptop so I could have them sort of organized and find things. But 80% of it was going back through them, making copies, stacking up, seeing what the hell I had. And after like day eight of when I took them all away, I had ended up with 7 stacks in front of me. And there was a big stack of stories. There's a big stack of people, a big stack of places, big stack of prescribes, lectures, or what do you call it? Advice. There's a big stack of poems, stack of prayers, and a stack of bumper stickers.
You said poems, not porn.
Right? Poems. Yeah, yes. not porn.
Okay.
Now, these were poems. So those are my 7 stacks. Stories, people, places, prescribes, poems, prayers, and a whole lot of bumper stickers. And then it was sifting through those where the title Greenlight came from, because I noticed that that was an outcome of a lot of events that, even though they seemed like red and yellow light to my life, that a lot of them revealed Greenlight assets in their future.
And I know something that you cover on that front in the book, and I've heard you talk about this on your tour, is when you were able to transition a little bit more into getting things made that you wanted made. Yep. And taking roles that you wanted a little bit more than possibly the romantic comedy track. It seems like a lot of that stuff that you have gotten done once you were able to be a little more choosy is a little dark. And to me, Rust Cole is the greatest character in the history of dramatic television. And I
greatest
wonder,
detective ever walked.
Yeah. And I wonder if you're the type of guy who, when you're playing someone who is like Rust, so nihilistic and his worldview, if that impacts you personally at all.
Sure. Well, look, every role, you know, and there's a misconception about acting out there. It's like you think it's all about playing someone else. No, you study that other character and you give what the page gives you. But every good actor is playing a part of themselves. You have to ultimately, by the time it gets to screen and it gets to the day where you're actually shooting the scene, it needs to be deeply personal to where I look at it like an old 70s Equalizer, you know. Rustin Cole, An Island of a Man, those philosophies, that agnostic sort of nihilistic guy. We all got that in us. I've got it in me. I just raised the volume. I raised the HKZ on that myself. And then this part over here, which is, you know, good time or hey, let it slide or believer. No, I'm just lower that down on me. So every character is a version of some part of humanity that every actor, if it's worth the salt, needs to find that part of themselves and really portray that and emulate that.
I think some of that is shown by the fact that, as you highlight in the book, many of your most iconic lines were not written by someone else.
Yeah.
And it all, I seriously got chills after reading the part about Dazed, which seems weird because that's not your most serious work, but just about going on set and you actually came up with, let's say, the line to the redhead.
So you want to hear that story?
Sure.
You just read it though, but it's worth sharing. It's a good
one. It's great. Yeah, I had never heard it before.
Yeah, so I get the role as David Wooderson in Dazed and Confused. I was in the bright bar right time, introduced myself to the right guy, get called in, 3 lines, I get it, 3 lines turn into 3 weeks work. But before the 3 lines turn into 3 weeks work, I show up on set to do what's called a hair makeup test on the set of Dazed and Confused. I am not scheduled to work that day. It's just me show up, do hair makeup. Richard Linklater, the director, will leave the set when he's cleared to come over and look at me and go, yeah, change this, do this, die like this, etc. On this so said night, outside the Top Notch drive-in, I come out of the trailer, hair and makeup, Richard comes up. Oh, this is great. Yeah, well, I like that. This is Wooderson. Yeah, it's great. Super. I'm about to leave, about to shake his hand and leave. And he goes, hey, wait a minute. He goes, you know, Wooderson's probably the type of guy who's been with the typical hot chicks at school. You know, do you think he'd have interest in the redheaded intellectual? I'm like, sure, man. Wooderson likes all kinds of chicks. He's like, well, Marissa Ribisi's playing the redheaded intellectual over here. She's sitting in her car. She's got the nerds in the back seat. Maybe Wooderson, you know, pulls up and tries to pick her up. I'm like, yeah, sure. Give me 30 minutes. I take a walk, go through my head. Who is my man? Who's Wooderson? Who's Wooderson? Next thing I know, I'm sitting in the car. I've got a lavalier mic on me. The place is lit. I'm in the parking lot at the Top Notch about to shoot my very first scene to go pick up the Cynthia character. And there's not a line written. So I started to think about who is my man, Wooderson. And in my head, I started saying, okay, Wooderson is about his car. I said to myself, all right, I'm in my 70 Chevelle. There's one. I said, Wooderson's about getting high. I said, well, Slater's riding shotgun. He's always got a doobie rolled up. There's two. I said, I'm about rock and roll. I said, I got Ted Nugent Stranglehold in the 8-track right now. There's three. And then I hear, action. And I look up, and in my head, I said, Wooderson's about picking up chicks. I got 3 out of 4. Put it in drive. Pull out. I'm going to get the fourth. All right, all right, all right. So those were 3 affirmations of the three things my character did have while he was going to get the fourth. And, yeah, then that scene was pretty much improvised. And then Rick kept inviting me back, you know, to the set, and would throw me in the middle of scenes, and that cast would lob me lines and ask me questions in the middle of scenes, and I would just kind of answer like Wooderson would.
And same with Keep on Living on the football field at the end?
Yeah, that was actually 5 days after my dad passed away, 5 days into shooting Days Confused. So I rushed back home to Houston. I'm there for 4 days. We do the Irish Wake and everything. I come back. My family says, get back to work. That's what Dad would want you to do. I go back. There's that scene on the football field at the end of the movie. Well, about sundown that night, before we had started shooting, Richard Linklater, the director, and I were walking around on our own, just chatting, man to man, buddy to buddy. And he was asking, what do you think it's all about? You know, and I was like, well, my dad moved on. He's physically gone. But how can I keep him spiritually alive in me? Yeah, can I? He's just got to just keep living spiritually in me. Well, I just said it out loud because it had kind of come to me, and it was about my father's death. Well, that night on the football field, when Randall Pink Floyd's going, do I sign the drug policy or not? Do I play? And I go, well, you can do whatever you want to do. You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N. And I just threw it into the scene, and it stuck and became sort of a one-liner that I've tried to apply to almost everything in my life where I can. And it hasn't not worked yet. I don't know where it doesn't apply.
Amazing that those two things that you came up with on your first job have stuck with you all these years. And I'm going to make people have to buy the book to get the story on why there's no G.
Why there's no G, baby. There's definitely no G on purpose.
All right, that's part one of our recorded interview with Matthew McConaughey. Dan read his book, Green Lights. I really feel like they connected and had a moment there. You guys might be life partners one day.
There's a very good chance that we are going to become very good friends. In the future, you'll probably just see us hanging out. But I will not forget those around me now.
Well, coming up next, we'll play part two, including some audio we have of Colt McCoy talking to the Hardline about a speech that McConaughey gave to the 2005 Texas football team, and it's awesome, and it's next. Coming up on 1 o'clock with Dan and Jake here on The Ticket. Got a lot of NBA for you in the next segment, as it is draft day. We'll have the coverage starting 6:30 here on The Ticket. Right now, we're going to play you part two of our recorded interview with just the savant.
McConaughey.
You got it. That's probably the biggest progress we've made in the 9 months we've been doing this show together. I quickly taught you there's an easy way that you need to learn how to spell McConaughey, because it's one that everyone always has to look up.
A lot of debate on how to do that, but
I won out.
We got there.
So, yeah, it was wild. I got to be honest, not sure the last time I felt nervous in this job. I was pretty nervous. I was just sitting there thinking at some point in the next few minutes, he's going to be looking at me.
Yeah, I was more nervous leading up to it. But then as he showed up, he's McConaughey, man.
That's kind of what I was going to get to. It was the most nervous I'd been to start something, and within 2 minutes felt like you're talking to an old friend.
You just laying back.
And he's able to do that with everyone he meets. That's an incredible interpersonal skill that he just...
And I think
he's being himself.
That's how I thought about his movies. Like, I've thought he's more like Randall Pink Floyd. He's a jock. He's a chick flick star. He's, you know, the stoners love him. What is he?
Everything.
Is he a chick flick guy, or is he a stoner, or is he a an athlete.
And oh, by the way, I'm just going to be a writer now. I'm just going to put a book out of all my journals, green lights. So before we finish up part
two. He's a philosopher?
Right. I did want to play this one little thing here, a longer version of something we're going to play for him. This is Colt McCoy on with the Hardline in the last year. And they get into a story about when Colt was still a backup for the 05 team that ended up winning in the Rose Bowl. Of course, we've always loved McConaughey's speeches to the team. He's had some great ones that got made public before, but
it's kind of odd that he does it.
Right. I mean, he does it because he loves it.
He asks the coach, can I speak to the team? And the coach is like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, so Colt McCoy setting this up will lead us to part two of the interview.
We had finished like our week of practice in Austin. McConaughey's at practice. And we're like breaking down, and Coach Brown lets him come up and say he asked Coach Brown, you know, can I have a word with these guys, you know, before we go out to California. It's a big deal for him, right? He's still living in Hollywood and all that. And so I don't remember all the things that he said. It was very funny. It was, you know, semi encouraging. It was McConaughey at his finest. But he had everybody stand up and like lock arms like this, and he started singing a song that he made up. And we're like, what is going on? And it goes like this. He goes, somebody don't think so. Somebody knows so. And he kept going, somebody don't think so. I kid you not. The whole team was jumping up and down, singing that song for like 5 minutes. And McConaughey was in the middle. I mean, before you know it, I mean, like, helmets are flying, shoulder pads are coming off, everybody's like, and then we, like, hopped on the bus and went out to California, and, you know, we won the game. It was crazy.
That is awesome.
But it was, yeah,
so, he doesn't have some canned speech where he's just giving you platitudes from a motivational poster. He's just singing melodies in the middle of that he just thought of that morning in the middle of a group of 90 college football players. So, that's important because we're going to play some of that for him here. Here's part two of our interview with Matthew McConaughey. I want to play one more brief piece of audio for you here. This is from an interview that actually occurred on our station. So I'm going to play this for you, and you tell me, Matthew McConaughey, do you recognize this?
Somebody don't think so. Somebody knows so.
Oh, yes.
He kept going, somebody don't think so.
Do you know who
who is that? All right, he's somebody from the 2005 University of Texas Longhorn National team.
That is correct. At the time, backup quarterback Colt McCoy, who was telling that story about the speech in the locker room before they headed out to the
Somebody don't think so. Somebody knows so. Yeah, I remember that. It was, you know, you got a national, that confident team, that team going into a national championship and towards the end of that season. You know, they don't need a booster of, come on, guys. They don't need the pump-up speech, right? It's like, let's get something. I thought they need something lyrical that they can get behind that is about just straight ownership of who they are, that's affirmative, moving forward with great confidence. And so that little riff came to me one night before I went to practice. And I said, that's what, just go in there and get them going on that. And so I started singing that practice, and they started chiming in. Of course, every time I talk to them, I'm like, what the hell is he going on about that? And then I got them, they all got in tune. And then there in Pasadena, we all sang it again before that game.
Incredible. You know, I feel like everybody will say, or people that say, I don't have any regrets are full of it. And everybody has some kind of regrets. I kind of think you don't, and that you're not full of it after reading that book. And that might be based on your just the theory of green lights, and you need the reds and the yellows to appreciate the greens, perhaps.
Yeah,
made mistakes, but
sure. And yeah, let's make that real clear. I mean, I'm pretty open about that in the book. You see me stepping shit quite a bit.
Well, I was betting on the Bills. That was nice.
Put it all on the Bills. When you're on a heater, you're on a heater.
Yeah.
I didn't see things straight, you know, seeing things straight. Yeah, look, I mean, that's part of what the book's about. There's many things that I go, oh, I could have done that better. Oh, I could have handled that better. I could have handled that relationship better. That breakup, that's it. Whatever that run-in was, I could have handled that better. But in the rearview mirror, so many of the things that I did wrong or could have done better, where I stepped in SHIT, I either got embarrassed enough about that situation and of failure, or pissed off enough about that situation that I made changes that led to other great rewards. So, you know, I, like everybody, go through my, hey, what am I going to forgive you for, McConaughey? What am I going to say? Enough's enough. We're stopping that in our lives. I go through those recalibrations all the time, but I can't, I look back, I wouldn't change any of it. I mean, if life's all green lights, then it's all just for entertainment. And what the hell, if it's one big Saturday, what are we doing here? So those red and yellows have led to brighter, shining, longer lasting greens in my life. Yeah.
So as I told you, you portrayed my favorite TV character of all time in Rustin Cole. You're also right about not putting the ketchup on the sandwich, but putting it on the side and dipping it. But you're also in my favorite comedy of all time. Legendary movie, all-star cast. You've got to tell me.
Tropic Thunder.
Was Tropic Thunder the most fun you've ever had making a movie?
So much fun. We were in Kauai because our director had a house. Had a house there. I go over. I'm already jumping in with all those that are in the main cast, right? And Downey Jr.'s doing his thing. Jack Black's doing his thing. Everyone's going off. Every scene, the whole crew's laughing their ass off everywhere. And I hop in this smaller role and have a good time and attack it. And it's, you know, the ceiling for comedy and insanity was very high. So I went for it. And then I got called back. We shot the stuff with Tom Cruise's character at the end about the G5, G Nickel. That was a reshoot. We added that in later, so we came back and added that part in. That was a whole hell of a lot of fun. Man, that movie is one of those, you can put it on anywhere in the movie at any time, and it holds up all the way out.
Yeah, it's legendary.
The DVD commentary is also legendary. If you've ever had a chance to watch that, because they actually put some things in there just for the commentary. But I bet you won't. You're a busy man. You got stuff to do.
I haven't even seen all my movies.
Is that true? Really? Because yes. You said you watch True Detective every Sunday.
I watched it every Sunday. They gave it to me, obviously, as a star in it and as an executive producer. I had the ability on the DVD to watch it straight through. But I said, my wife and I said, no, you know what? Every Sunday night, tuck the kids in, we get our dinner, get a bottle of wine, we're going to go in there. And we looked forward to that for 8 weekends in a row. And so I was on the same trip as everybody else.
Yeah.
My Monday morning proverbial water cooler talk was about what happened last night in True Detective and what was going to come up. And mind you, I didn't remember actually what was going to come up. I had made it, but I didn't know where they had cut I'd forgotten completely where they cut the episodes. So it was a killer experience for me. I missed that show on TV.
Did you watch the Unsolved Mysteries? Matthew was in Unsolved Mysteries, and
they caught the guy too. They
YouTube searched it. That actually happened?
Yes. And this was a joke in our house. They caught that guy within 2 weeks after that from a tip that was called in from watching the Unsolved Mysteries. So the joke in the house was, I was going around to my big brother's going, Lifesaver.
That's awesome. Hey, we really appreciate your time. We wanted to ask for one more thing. If indeed you would be able to give it, I think you'll be able, but you'd be willing to give it to us. This is our wacky radio liner, where we would like you to identify yourself and then say something like this.
Hey, this is McConaughey here, and I got to tell you, I never listen to Dan and Jake on the Ticket.
Perfect.
Thanks so much, man.
Let it rip.
Best of luck.
Appreciate it. I'm glad
to read
the book. I'm glad to translate it, man.
And, good luck. We'll talk to you down the road, hopefully. See ya.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
Bye. I'll be good.
And there he goes.
He had a huge smile when you started playing the Colt McCoy song. And then he had total recall of it.
15 years later, something that he
made up off the top of his head right there?
Wasn't something that he's asked about a lot, you know, where you have to be refreshed on these topics for interviews. And the other thing, too, man, is just, we all know how this works. Pull back the curtain on how press tours work. He probably talked to 10, 15 other people all over the world that day, and yet was, at 7 p.m., dialed in and engaging and funny and fun and warm.
Yeah, he was late from another one, and
right.
Then they said, we have a tight 12 minutes, which we turned into 15.
But I'm just
and
so
said
impressed.
He had another thing to do right after that.
By people that are able to do that and not seem like they're just faking their way through it, and yet they still can just turn right back around and be friendly and fun, and it's just incredible. They don't make many people like that, like flat out.
Yeah, he was. It's one of those things for sure that later that night, I was like, oh, could have done this.
Oh, yeah.
I had 20 things we could have talked to him about.
Yep.
But he is around. He doesn't seem shy, although we had not had him ever. But we never had Blake before at the helm, man.
That's right.
Never had a bulldog there in the producer chair just chasing down these guests. And, you know, so maybe we can get him again at some point. And, you know, because we're probably going to be friends in the future, we'll just
DM him. Great work, Blake.
Thanks, guys.
And he
was awesome.
I mentioned Unsolved Mysteries there because in the book it just says, and it might have even been after Wooderson, which seems really weird.
I remember reading it was like the first thing that he did.
But I guess if you're early career, too, it might have been after he filmed Wooderson, but he was still just out on auditions trying to get stuff, and he landed this Unsolved Mystery, and whatever they pay, I'm sure, is good for a college kid. And, yeah, you could YouTube that. It's kind of funny just to see McConaughey, and it's a real outlandish situation, but he claimed it was true. And
they caught the guy. Of course, if McConaughey touches something and appears in your Unsolved Mysteries, it's leading to a charge and an arrest.
Lifesaver.
Within weeks, lifesaver. All right, coming up next.
It's a green light, bro.